illegal up until 2000. Huh? Race mixing was illegal up until 2002.
Oh my God.
You're going to give up 50,000 years of evolution if you mix up with this dude.
Are you filming us?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
But you just look awkwardly.
Literally, you're just throwing down your genetic line.
Who show?
Pretty much, you're just LARPing. You're LARPing as a European in America. If you had any actual, like, heart.
Uh-huh.
And when a gay couple does it, they're much more likely to get harassed for it than a straight couple. Nobody cares when there's a straight couple in shows or movies, but when there's a gay couple, it usually sparks some controversy as it's seen as political or pushing an agenda. Straight relationships are often recognized as partners, unions, and friendships, in addition to the sexual aspect, but often the only aspect of gay relationships that are recognized is the sexual aspect. But gay relationships aren't solely about sex any more than straight relationships are. Sex represents a fraction of the relationship. Some people say they don't care as long as it isn't, quote, pushed in their faces or shoved down their throats, which reinforces the idea that gay people should not show public displays of affection in the same way that black people weren't allowed to do so in the past, or an interracial couple doing so would lead to the destruction of America. Sounds familiar, doesn't it? But one reason sex is such a focus is that you're not even going to know that a couple is gay unless they show affection toward each other. Sometimes, people will cite gay pride parades as being forced on us, but nobody's forcing them to watch that. On the contrary, imagery from gay pride parades is popular to spread to straight people by straight people, specifically for the purpose of propagandizing and outrage, when they would have never seen it otherwise. Despite following gay people on social media, the vast majority of the gay imagery I see online comes from straight people sharing it because they're outraged about it. If not for them, I'd rarely see it, despite following gay people. This ignores the fact that straight people often also engage in similar public sexual displays, for instance, at spring break, Mardi Gras, or even just an average day at the beach. So in this regard, are we more free or less free? I would say that we're more free, because at least we're moving in the right direction. Yet there are still people who would be frowned upon in the same way they would have been frowned upon in decades past, but at least they can't be challenged legally. So, though we are more free in this regard, there is still much room for improvement. Furthermore, there are currently attempts to create new laws to ban transgender medical care for any age. Other ways to ban transgenderism is being explored, like making it illegal to present yourself as a gender other than the one with which you were born. Barring these setbacks, despite the fact that we are generally moving in the right direction, there still exist many people who would call it the wrong direction. There are still people who would like to restrict racial minorities, gay people, and transgender people in a myriad of ways, but those people should not claim to value freedom, and because of that, they should also never claim to be upset about any perceived loss of freedom, because it's not actually freedom that they care about. It's special privileges that they get to enjoy, which others cannot. That is what they care about. And they should learn how to differentiate between that and freedom. What about other forms of freedom? In the 19th century, you could pretty much do whatever drugs you wanted. It was not illegal. The first law against drugs was the banning of smoking opium in opium dens in 1875. Nowadays, you can lose your freedom for years for possessing drugs. So in that regard, we were more free 150 years ago. Also consider that was before the first car or airplane. most people were limited to being local their entire lives. But now, you can fly across the country in 3 hours, or hop in your car and do it yourself in 3 days, or talk to anybody around the world instantly. That is a freedom we did not have back then. But thanks to technological advancements, we are now freer to be where we want, when we want. While easier global transportation has increased freedom for some of us, also consider that it has increased the ability of corporations to save money by moving their production to countries where slave labor is more easily utilized, thereby increasing the demand for slaves. So, that's an aspect of modernity that both facilitates more freedom for some, while facilitating less freedom for others. Consider that centuries ago, people lived their lives being tracked by neither the government nor huge corporations. They had more freedom to be private. Now, if we want to engage in modern forms of media or communication, which is often necessary for our livelihoods, our data will be tracked and sold. The Patriot Act made it so that people can be legally spied upon, searched, and even held indefinitely without trial. In that regard, we are less free. Some people might point to the recent COVID-19 response as evidence that we are less free, but we took many of the exact same precautions during the Spanish flu pandemic in 1918. A century ago, the government banned public gatherings and shut down schools and churches. Bear in mind that was a time when virtually everyone was religious, so it was not an attack on religion the way the exact same measures are depicted today. There was social distancing and mask mandates. Some areas even made it the law, so you could be arrested or fined for not wearing a mask or even not wearing it properly. And that was over 100 years ago. So are we more free or less free? Yes and no. It's complicated. It depends on who you are and where you are. Minorities of many different demographics have gained more freedom in Western society, including atheists, religious and racial minorities, and LGBT people, with the caveat that transgender people may lose some freedoms in the near future, but I believe, hopefully, that will be temporary. In Asia, Africa, and the Middle East, however, there are still significant restrictions on individual freedom that affect religion, sexual orientation, and freedom of speech. In wealthier countries, slavery has mostly disappeared, while in poorer countries, slavery is still a huge problem, and demand for slave labor is often driven by the wealthier countries. So there's plenty of blame to go around if that's your thing. So I will answer this question by saying it's unclear, and there's much room for improvement. Are we committing fewer crimes? This is a question which a lot of people would answer that we are clearly committing way more crime than ever before. This belief is the result of three things. Widespread video recording, which is a very new phenomenon. Social media, because it's easy for such videos to get a lot of traffic and be used to push certain narratives. And politics, because in order to sell solutions, you must get people to believe the current methods aren't working and that things are thus getting worse, and they need you, the good politician, to fix it. The truth is precisely the opposite. Crime has dropped around the world. In my country, the United States, not only are we committing less crime, but we are committing significantly less crime. If you look at the murder rate of the last century, you'll see that we're currently closer to where it was in the 1950s, while it was twice as bad in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, back when I grew up, it was also pretty bad leading up to the Great Depression. Despite this, there is a new push to expand the death penalty. In Tennessee, for instance, our politicians are spending their time trying to find barbaric ways for the state to be able to kill its citizens. They specifically want to bring back the electric chair, firing squads, and hanging from trees.
Leader Sheriff. Thank you, Chairman. And thank you, Representative Powers, for bringing this. I think it's a very good idea. And I was just wondering about, could I put an amendment on that? It would include hanging by a tree also. And also, I would like to sign on to your bill, sir. Thank you. Thank you.
Do these barbaric actions deter murder? Well, the electric chair started being used at the turn of the 20th century, and as you can see, the murder rate actually increased. It did not seem to have an effect. Our current dramatic decrease in murder is part of what is known as the crime drop, and it is a worldwide phenomenon, with the exceptions of Central and South America. Despite what the news and the social media influencers and the politicians would have you believe, the world used to be a lot more violent. Here's what the homicide rate looked like across Western Europe since the 1300s. And here we are, at the right end of this graph, screaming about how bad things are. And that civilization is obviously collapsing, as is evident by all of the murder and crime we see now. Guess what the 15th century would look like if everyone back then had cell phones and social media to show you the horrors of their time. It would look downright apocalyptic. I keep getting told that the reason for our quote-unquote decline now is lack of God. But back then, everybody believed in God, and everyone went to church, and the church even had respectable authority, yet you were way more likely to be killed back then. It seems that there was much less respect for human life in the past. Remember when I told you that our population is getting older? Well, societal improvements that make life easier for human beings caused the population to get progressively older. Developed nations have a much higher median age than developing nations. That age difference also correlates with crime differences. Not only does life expectancy increase, but people have fewer children. One major reason being that we don't rely on child labor. From a strictly financial standpoint, that makes children an expense rather than an asset. This causes a decline in birth rates. Subsequently, the population gets older. Older people commit far fewer crimes than younger people. That's true across race, gender, sexual orientation, etc. It's universal. A lot of criminologists believe that the crime drop was driven by a reduction of unemployment and poverty, which makes sense and also fits with the age correlation. The older the population, the more demand for employees. Also, older people typically have significantly more wealth than younger people. So prosperity lowers the crime rate, and it makes the population older, which also lowers the crime rate. If the population continues to get older, and the projections indicate that it will, then that could end up being an economic concern with fewer available employees and nobody to pay for social programs that older people rely upon. This can be mitigated with immigration and automation, but currently there is still a lot of resistance to both. What about things like pedophilia, grooming, and rape? Are those getting worse? To look at our social media, you would think that we have suddenly gone insane with sexual assault and grooming. Everyone is talking about it. Everyone is accusing each other of it. The conversation seems to be very politically charged. But my goal here is to look at things more objectively and come to accurate conclusions regardless of my political beliefs. That's why, being someone who knows that social media blows everything out of proportion, I was very shocked to see this statistic, which shows that rape skyrocketed in 2012 and then continued to increase. When I saw this, I was baffled because it's so incongruent with the dramatic reduction in the rest of criminal behavior. So is this true? Is the social media hysteria finally right about something after all? Is it because of increased tolerance of LGBT people? Is it our increasing so-called degeneracy? Is it the prevalence of pornography? Some people might see this statistic and use it to promote any one of those narratives, but not so fast. I need explanations, not narratives. So, naturally, I investigated what caused this increase, which is a very difficult thing to do on such an accusatory internet. All kinds of different people will give you all kinds of different reasons for why rape increased. But what if their premise is wrong to begin with? What if they're all just begging the question, and the actuality is that rape did not increase after all? It actually went down, just like the rest of violent crime. So what is with this graph? Well, in 2012, the FBI changed how it defines rape. The old definition only included forced penile penetration of a woman's vagina. It did not include penetration of the mouth or anus. It did not include penetration with objects. It did not include people who were raped while drugged or unconscious. It did not even include men who were raped. When the FBI included these other instances under the definition of rape, as well they should, then far more cases were naturally eligible to be included and reflected in the stats. They did not change the stats retroactively, so what you're seeing in this graph is the old definition of rape being used up until 2012, and then the new definition taking over from there. It's not an epidemic of new rapes. When you apply this new definition to prior years, rape still declined, even in 2012, where it seems to skyrocket on this graph. Bear in mind that I'm not saying it's no longer a problem. It is. The question we're asking here is whether it's getting better or worse. Are we at least headed in the right direction? Fortunately, it seems we are. I must stress that the crime stats can't really do enough to show how much better it is now than in the past, because certain things were not crimes in the past that are crimes today, so they're not reflected in the statistics. It was not a crime for a husband to force his wife to have sex, so that wasn't considered rape, and thus wasn't recorded as a crime. Even in the Bible, like in Numbers 31, female prisoners of war were forced to marry the men who killed their entire families, and that was not considered rape. It was considered their God-given right and standard practice as prescribed in Deuteronomy 21. Look at this. The majority of child rape victims are over 12 years old. But in the past, even in the recent past, it was not a crime to have sex with a 12-year-old, so there was no crime to report and be recorded in the statistics. But imagine if it had been. Now, it's illegal to have sex with children. It's either called rape or statutory rape. We actually have laws against it now. That wasn't always the case. Throughout most of history, including within the United States, you could marry a 12-year-old. There's religious people who say that the way we treat children now is going to bring down God's wrath. But the irony of that is that they're expressing their secular morality as if it's religious. Because throughout the most religious periods in history, people were marrying 12-year-olds, and that was considered perfectly normal, and there's no law against it in the Bible. So if you're religious and you have a problem with 12-year-olds getting fucked, that's your secular morality speaking, not your religious morality. Combine that with the fact that children were 50% of the deaths, and it seems that our secular society is quite blessed in comparison. If you were born during the most religious times in human history, you had a coin flip's chance of dying before your 10th birthday. And if you did manage to survive, then it was likely that somebody was going to have sex with you before you hit puberty. But now that the world is headed toward more secular, advanced societies, the narrative is that children have it worse than ever before. Once again, an inversion of reality. Why? I believe it's specifically done to demonize LGBT people, as they are often the ones accused of grooming and pedophilia. But is that what they're doing? Well, let me throw a couple stats at you. 98% of rapes are committed by men, and women are 91% of the victims. Of children, 1 in 5 are girls, and 1 in 20 are boys. The vast majority of the perpetrators are the opposite sex of their victims. It doesn't sound very LGBT to me. According to the Boston Area Rape Crisis Center, a child's risk of being molested by his or her relative's heterosexual partner was over 100 times greater than their being molested by someone who identifies as being homosexual, lesbian, or bisexual, which was 0.7% of the cases. If you look at all the propaganda on social media, you'll believe it's the exact opposite. So, do LGBT people deserve all this focus and accusation? The stats don't seem to justify that. Let's do a search. Let's do a neutral search for child sexual abuse scandal and focus on all the most recent events. Looks like, as usual, all the people on social media painting LGBT people as sexual abusers, and that we need to go back to God once again are in a complete inversion of reality. Ironically, the churches are the ones making it more difficult for me to determine if child sexual abuse is getting better or worse, because in 33 states, the clergy is exempt from having to report child sexual abuse, which helps them cover it up. More than 130 bills have been proposed to overturn that exemption, but failed due to intense pressure from religious groups and well-funded religious lobbyists. Why? Their argument is that it's an improper interference of the government into the practice of their religion. Not only do they know that children are being abused, but they are diligently trying to cover it up. And even with their efforts to cover it up, there are still new stories every single day of children being sexually abused in religious environments. But how often do you hear about that on social media? So, are we committing fewer crimes? Well, technically, there are way more laws now than in the past, so there are more ways to commit crimes. Now we have traffic laws, which obviously didn't exist before cars. Now we have all kinds of licensing laws and computer crimes and all sorts of ways to break the law that didn't exist before. But when we compare apples to apples, like murders, thefts, rapes, etc., we see that crime has dramatically decreased. There has been a recent uptick with the George Floyd riots and the pandemic, but during the last year, crime resumed its decrease, even in the cities, which are used as a political talking point regarding crime, even though the crime levels among cities with Republican governments are comparable to cities with Democratic governments. So, while it's not an entirely smooth downward trend, we are continuing a downward trend, and we're still in a far better place than we used to be. So, I have to answer this question with a yes. I'd also like to point out that this great decline in crime coincides with the great decline in religion. I'm not saying that one is a result of the other, but I am saying that the ages-old narrative that without religion everyone will become violent criminals is perfectly false. And we actually have many years of data now to prove it, here and around the world, especially in countries that are both far less violent and far less religious than the United States, like in Europe, Scandinavia, Canada, and Australia. Stop believing the inversion of reality. Stop scapegoating atheists and LGBT people, because clearly they are not the problem. Are we more prosperous? This is another interesting question in which everyone thinks the answer is the opposite of what it actually is. Every source I could find that tracks economic data around the world unanimously agrees that the world has gotten more prosperous. But to look at social media, you'd think that we are more impoverished than ever before. That's a little more understandable with the recent rise of inflation. If you look at what inflation has done over the last 60 years, you can see that we are currently in a bit of a spike, but it's nowhere near as bad as it was in 1980 or 1974. The cost of living has recently gone up around the world after the pandemic, and the gap between the wealthy and the poor keeps growing wider, which is not a good sign. But again, this largely depends on where you are in the world. For instance, these are the most prosperous and least prosperous countries on Earth. According to the Legatum Prosperity Index, which tracks the prosperity of 167 nations for the past 16 years, prosperity has largely increased in all but a few countries, several of which have been affected by war. Over the last decade, 148 countries saw improvement, while 19 countries saw deterioration. A far cry from the narrative that the world is collapsing and that we are on the brink of the end times. I should note, however, that due to the pandemic, the last 3 years of prosperity have plateaued. So there has not been much recent improvement. Hopefully, prosperity will resume the farther the pandemic is behind us. The index measures these 12 pillars: safety and security, personal freedom, governance, investment environment, enterprise conditions, infrastructure and market access, economic quality, living conditions, health, education, and natural environment. These are how all the countries rank. Again, we see an inversion of the religious narrative, as all the least religious countries are doing the best, while all the most religious countries are doing the worst. I don't believe religion is a cause as much as a symptom, but again, my reason for pointing it out is to show how, once again, the religious narrative is false. For peace and prosperity, find where the most atheists are and move there. Less worry means less religion. I cross-referenced this data with the World Bank's Changing Health of Nations report, which tracks 146 countries since 1995, and they are in agreement. Most countries have seen economic growth. They note, however, that some of that growth has relied upon unsustainable misuse of resources. For instance, significant deforestation and overfishing could lead to some problems in the future. Again, this report also indicates that wealth inequality is growing around the world. In other words, the middle class keeps shrinking. I personally believe that if the wealth gap keeps widening, it could lead to fertile ground for civil unrest. Regardless of the overall picture, there are some areas in which I do not believe we are doing as well. Some cost increases started well before the pandemic. Over the last 10 years, homelessness was declining until 2016 and has been going up ever since, though it's still not as bad as 2012. The cost of education and the cost of homeownership have both skyrocketed. Both have caused people to live paycheck to paycheck, which has left some people without any savings or even an emergency fund. More people are devoting a higher percentage of their income to paying off student loans. More people are paying higher mortgages and higher rent, leaving them with less savings and disposable income. Despite this, surprisingly, net worth has actually gone up. One of the narratives is that having a college degree is useless now, but that's not true. The median and average net worth goes up substantially with a college education. Another thing to consider on this graph is the gray areas. Those gray areas represent recessions. As you can see, in the last 30 years, there were 4 recessions. But in the 30 years before that, there were 8 recessions, twice as many. I have to say that we're doing better. I know the whole world is going through a rough patch due to the pandemic, and I know that the erosion of the middle class is a serious problem, along with the increasing unaffordability of homes and education. So, my answer has to be yes, but with the caveat that we are collectively more prosperous, but many of us are struggling individually, and there's a lot of room for improvement. Are we more knowledgeable? This is a really tricky answer to quantify. If you find IQ to be a meaningful measure, then yes, the average IQ has gone up by about 30 points in industrialized countries since the year 1900. That increase is known as the Flynn effect, and it is largely due to environmental factors, mostly because of increased education. When a country becomes more prosperous, it focuses more on education than survival, and its average IQ tends to go up. But because birth rates dramatically decline as a country becomes more prosperous, it is speculated that the average IQ will go down as fewer people are being born in countries with higher education. If less developed countries become more developed, however, then their average IQ could also increase, so it could go either way. There's a lot of variables to consider. Regardless, not everyone finds IQ meaningful, and notice that the question was about knowledge, not intelligence. Of course, both are related, but a less intelligent person can be more knowledgeable than a more intelligent one. And I'm wondering about knowledge. As it turns out, our collective knowledge as a species has exploded in the last 100 years. Whether we are more knowledgeable as individuals is not quite as clear. So again, it depends. As with prosperity, the whole of society has risen. But individually, the answer becomes different. First, as a society, it's foolish to even ask the question. Of course, we are way more knowledgeable. There used to be a huge debate over whether other galaxies existed, and it wasn't until exactly 100 years ago, in 1923, when Edwin Hubble proved that there are other galaxies. Think about that. Ours was the only galaxy we knew existed until just 100 years ago. Now we know there's hundreds of billions of galaxies. My YouTube channel existed before the general public knew that exoplanets exist. Back when I first came onto YouTube in 2008, people still debated about the possibility of there being other planets beyond the solar system. Creationists relied on exoplanets not existing so that they could claim that the Earth is one of a kind and thus has to be very finely tuned. But now we know there's more planets than grains of sand on Earth. You'd probably have a better chance of getting struck by lightning while winning the lottery than there not being another Earth-like planet out there. The first airplane flew in 1903. 44 years later, we broke the sound barrier in 1947. 22 years after that, we landed on the moon in 1969. Today, the computing power of a handheld video game system like the Nintendo Switch or the Steam Deck has infinitely more computing power than the first spacecraft to make it to the moon. An iPhone has over 7 million times the memory and over 100,000 times the processing power as the first spacecraft to land on the moon. Toys, phones, handheld video game systems, calculators, etc., are more powerful than the computer used to land on the moon. Speaking of phones, since the advent of the internet, we have access to what is pretty much a god machine. If you want to learn about something, you can instantly start learning about it, doesn't matter when or where. When I was a kid, you had to go to the library during the day and hunt for your answers in a sea of books. And the right books were not always available. If you wanted to find something that was in the news, you had to search through microfiche. We learned about the Dewey Decimal System in school. That information is completely useless to me now. Our knowledge in just about every topic has exploded. We know more about physics, astronomy, chemistry, history, engineering, biology, medicine, you name it. But here's the thing. Our advantage is also our disadvantage. Because now, there's so much more information to know in each topic. Human beings have to specialize. This means that to have sufficient knowledge to advance a given topic, you pretty much have to devote your life to it. In other words, nobody can be a jack of all trades anymore. This means that even our most brilliant minds are incredibly knowledgeable in one area while being totally ignorant in many other areas. This has the added detriment of giving the false impression that just because someone is an expert in one area, they are then qualified to speak about other areas of which they know nothing. That's how you get compartmentalized. There are people who can take an engine apart and put it back together again, but not understand basic philosophical concepts. And there are philosophers who don't know how to change their oil. These specializations create a helpful division of labor, but also a potential vulnerability in demand. Think about it. Human innovation throughout all of history, from the very first hunter-gatherers who figured out how to use fire, all the way to the people figuring out how to get artificial intelligence to make art, have done so in order to make human life easier. Agriculture, animal domestication, cooking utensils, the wheel, architecture, aqueducts, roads, boats, wagons, trains, cars, planes, robots, assembly lines, computers, etc., all built with the intention of making life easier. Invention built upon invention built upon invention. Until what? Until all of our knowledge is specialized and we don't learn what we don't need to learn. Think of all the forgotten knowledge. We live the solutions to the problems of which we are unaware. People already solved them for us. The problems that plagued our ancestors to the point in which it was all they thought about are things we never think about. Why? Because they were successful. That's why every tough guy who thinks that the world has gotten soft doesn't realize that they're soft too. We all are, except for maybe a tiny minority. Despite the fact that humanity is so much more knowledgeable now, a caveman from 20,000 years ago would have a much easier time surviving in the wild than any random person you pluck off the street today. Because they had knowledge we just don't need anymore, so it's lost to us. We still have access to that knowledge, but most of us don't look into it, let alone even think about it. That's because for thousands of years, the human project has been about how to make life easier. And we are the latest product of that project, of those thousands of years of work and innovation to make life easier. We are the current result. We have it the easiest. Now, I know it doesn't seem like that sometimes, but we do. We will continue the work of making our lives easier, and future generations will be the beneficiaries of our work as they continue the project. Perhaps 100 years from now, changing the oil of a car will seem laughably archaic, and nobody will know how to do it, because there will be no need to do it. Perhaps people 100 years from now will look back on how we live now and marvel at how hard we have it. But only if we do a good job at being human. So to sum up the answer to this question, as a society, we are significantly more knowledgeable than ever before. As individuals, a lot of us know more about the broader mysteries of the world and universe that even people of the relatively recent past wondered about. But human beings have become reliant on civilization, so much so that our very survival is dependent upon the systems we have developed. If we were to somehow lose those systems, a significant portion of us would die very quickly for lack of resources because we rely on mass production, international trade, and division of labor. And the next wave of us would die due to lacking the knowledge that is no longer needed in a civilized world. We would be less vulnerable as a species if we reorganized the world into more self-sufficient communities. I don't believe that will happen because human beings will also always seek power, and power facilitates two things very well: corruption and consolidation. So the answer is yes, we are much more knowledgeable as a collective, but our individual knowledge is more specialized, modern, and makes us more vulnerable. Final question, are we happier? In my opinion, this is the most difficult question to answer for two reasons. One, it's not easily quantifiable. And two, it relies on self-awareness. And I don't think that a lot of people are very self-aware. You might ask, how could someone not know if they're happy? But the question is not, are we happy? The question is, are we happier? As in, than we used to be. And people do not accurately assess the past. I always suspected that. But I didn't realize just how badly people assess the past until I got old enough to actually live through the years people now romanticize. So now I know how full of shit they are. When I was a kid, I got the impression that most people would have said that they're less happy than they used to be. I think that's just a part of getting older. We tend to look at the past with more fondness than we had when we actually lived through it. Most people remember their experiences between the ages of 15 to 30 the best, because that's the period when you experience a lot of major life events for the first time: living on your own, college, love, work, marriage, children, etc. Psychologists call that the reminiscence bump. After 30, everything kind of just starts to blend together. The best way to combat that is to keep trying to experience new things. But most people either choose not to do that or their life circumstances prohibit them from doing so. So I came into this expecting people to say they are less happy now, and that is exactly what I found. It's pretty unanimous. All the polling data I could find is in agreement. If we can trust people's perceptions, and I frankly don't think we can, then happiness has declined. Another thing to consider is that all of this data is from recent history and cannot be replicated with the deep past because there's no polling data from back then. What we can do is look at what people said of their own volition. And interestingly enough, what we find is that people of the past also yearned for better times of the past. If you go back to a time that you think was ideal, what you will find is a lot of people of that time wanting to go back to some other time they thought was ideal. Isn't that interesting? Remember when I said that the human project has always been about making our lives easier? Well, as our lives have gotten easier and easier, Some people just keep wanting to go back to when times were harder and harder. And that's true throughout all of history. Older generations have been complaining about the next generations for thousands of years, and nobody seems to notice this bullshit pattern to recognize it for what it is when they become the older generation and start doing it themselves. Let me read you some quotes. Women painted like prostitutes, throwing off every kind of social restraint. All of these go to prove that it is now the vulgar mob that gives the tone. Who said that? Ben Shapiro? Jordan Peterson? Matt Walsh? No, it was said by Oswald Spengler in 1933. The free access which many young people have to romances, novels, and plays has poisoned the mind and corrupted the morals of many a promising youth. That was said in the year 1790. Modern fashions seem to keep on growing more and more debased. The ordinary spoken language has also steadily coarsened. That was said in the year 1330. One of the things that's bothersome about people who want to bring back the old days is that they can live that way if they want to, without bringing the rest of us with them. If you think life was better before the internet and before TV, back when people were living off the land and living modestly, then you can go and do that. Unplug. Get off the grid. There's been people who have done that. We usually don't hear from them anymore. They're living their own lives. It's interesting to note that researchers have found that happiness does not correlate with GDP growth. If it did, we would all be way more ecstatic than we used to be. And wealth, after a certain point, doesn't seem to make you happier. Once you have enough wealth to not have to worry about the basics, then the accumulation of money has diminishing returns in terms of happiness. Another reason people could legitimately be less happy in a world in which they have a lot more and life is far easier is because happiness is linked to expectations. People expect more out of our world today than they used to. Hundreds of years ago, people would live their whole lives without the world changing very much. Thousands of years ago, it didn't change at all across multiple generations. So, people did not have very many expectations, no reasons to be disappointed. But recently, change has been coming exponentially. People of modernity do have expectations. We expect the future to be different than the present, because that is our experience. This is going to be a very ironic statement. We've become acclimated to change. When that progress does not happen in the way we want or at the speed we want, it becomes other than what we expected, lets us down, makes us feel less happy. Look at all the old movies that envisioned us as having flying cars by now, or having dinner on the moon. Part of our unhappiness could very well be explained by simply expecting more out of life than we used to. This happiness-expectation link happens on an individual basis as well. It's called hedonic adaptation, or some call it the hedonic treadmill. Essentially, it means that your happiness tends to return to a certain base level, regardless of what happens to you. In other words, if you won $100 million in the lottery, you're going to be really happy about it at first, but you're going to get used to it. And those levels of happiness will decline right back to what they used to be before you won the $100 million, or at least to where they would be at levels of financial security. Conversely, people who experience bad things eventually recover to their base level of happiness, typically. It's interesting to note that those who win the lottery typically have more difficulty enjoying the little things, and those who recover from trauma are typically more able to enjoy the little things. So, counterintuitively, a lottery winner could have more difficulty finding happiness than a trauma survivor, simply because the lottery winner becomes jaded and calloused to joy, while the trauma survivor becomes appreciative and sensitive to joy. I believe that phenomenon is mirrored in our society today, because as a society, we have gotten used to having it good. We live in the most absurdly magical time in the history of Earth, a time in which children aren't dropping dead all around us, a time in which you can ask the God machine in your pocket a question and get an answer, a time in which traveling a few hundred miles won't take weeks, but merely an afternoon, a time in which you aren't in danger of starving because of bad weather or an invading army. We won the time lottery of Earth's history, and we have hedonically adapted our way back to base levels of happiness while thinking we're less happy due to things like nostalgia and revisionism about times that were far worse. And because we've had it so good, we may find it more difficult to enjoy simple pleasures or be grateful for what we do have, especially when the horrendous alternative is beyond living memory. So, I am forced to answer this question with a no, we are not happier, because that is what people say. But I'm adding the caveat that it's probably largely an illusion. Six questions are answered with a yes, one with an uncertain, and one with a no. I must conclude that society certainly is not currently collapsing and that things have largely gotten better. I will add, however, that change happens much more quickly now than in the past. That could be very good, and it largely has been, but it could also be very bad. At the speed we're driving, mistakes will be less forgiving. Yes, we are currently not collapsing, but even that, too, can change very quickly. So, I will leave you with these three words of advice. Always be vigilant.
Best in life. Crush your enemies. See them driven before you. They hear the lamentation of your women. That is good. That is good.
Tune in next time to Redfield Hardcore. If it's real, take the red pill.
True winner.
And I get the green light from Mom.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.